Well, hello, and welcome to the PGPZ podcast. My name is Jared Kieber. I am your host. As always, if you'd like to drop us a line, you can check out our website, www.PrinceGeorgePentecostalChurch.com. Once you get to that website, there is a link to sermons, and under sermons, there is a series entitled Podcast. You click on Podcast, and there is a form there that you can fill out, send to us. We would love to hear from you, and it's not nearly as complicated as I make it sound. Getting there is actually quite simple. Well, on today's episode, we are going to talk about the thing that everybody wants more of. And if you're wondering, the answer is not cowbell. No, today we are going to be talking about money. Big story today and yesterday. If you looked at your news feed, whenever this is coming out, probably a couple of weeks ago already, is that 46% of Canadians are on the brink of insolvency. What that means is Canadians, a large portion of them anyways, are living very much so paycheck to paycheck. Could be because of a few things. It costs money to live. If you want a house, you're going to have to pay money. You're also going to have to pay money to insure that house. You want a vehicle, there's some more money. You also have to pay to insure the vehicle. It costs money to buy groceries. You want to eat fresh food, it's not cheap. There are a lot of expenses. So it could be that the reason 46% of Canadians are on the brink of insolvency is just that things are so dang expensive. Even hobbies are ridiculously expensive. I've recently been looking at and considering the idea of getting into a certain form of hunting that apparently is highly secretive. Didn't know that before I got there, but it's been interesting. But one of the pieces of gear for that is a mere $900 for a collar for a dog. $900 for a GPS collar and tracker. It's a lot of money. So maybe the reason that insolvency and money is an issue is that things are so expensive. Could also be that we just don't know how to live within our means. I remember a few years ago, my wife and I wanted to renovate our basement in our home. We figured it would cost maybe $3,000 to $4,000. We went into the bank to look at the possibility of refinancing our home or re-upping our mortgage early. We sat down with the individual we were dealing with at the bank, and after talking for a few minutes, he looked at us and said, "Most people in your tax bracket have at least 1 to 2 credit cards maxed out." And so I was actually quite proud in that moment because we didn't have 2 credit cards maxed out. We didn't even have 1 credit card maxed out. But what that said to me is there are a lot of people who don't exactly know how to live within their means. And part of this might be at some point in time, maybe you're making good money and then you're not making so much money, and that has an effect. I think in we're not really in northern British Columbia. We're about halfway actually, but a lot of people think we are northern British Columbia. But in our neck of the woods and up and through Alberta, a lot of people work in the resource industry, and the resource industry tends to go up and down. Sometimes you can make a lot of money really quickly in the resource industry, and then other times you are laid off with very little notice, and all of a sudden that new truck that you bought is a significant hindrance. And so living within your means can be a significant issue. But that begs the question, what is a Christian perspective on money? And of course, if you want to get into a Christian perspective on money, you could talk about a lot of different things, but there are a few things that I would like to point out about money when talking about it from a Christian perspective. Just going to pause here for a second because I'm somewhat out of breath and I have a thought on this. I enjoy listening to lectures, and one of the ways that I get through lectures is I will go on iTunes U and I will turn the speed of the lecture up to 1.5. I have a theory about this, that as I listen to these lectures where the professor is talking at 1.5 speed, it's actually changing the way that I think I should talk so that I'm talking faster than I should. I don't know if there's anything to that theory. You would probably know better than I do right now because you are listening to me. But if I need to stop and catch my breath, it probably means I'm talking too fast. Let me slow down here for a moment. Breathe. All right. Few thoughts on money from a Christian perspective. The first is this. It's not really yours. Let that sink in for a minute. The money, in fact, all the resources you have, but the money specifically that you have is not really yours. It could be taken from you in an instant. You know, we talk about that aspect of resource development in the North. You could have a job one moment and you could be out of work the next moment. The reality is money is both a gift from God. He gives you the ability to accumulate it. And it's also something that can be taken away from you very quickly. I thought it was interesting. I mentioned earlier, I like to listen to lectures. I'm a bit of a nerd that way. One of the things I've noticed as I've listened to lectures on political philosophy or on philosophy and theology is just about everyone references Plato's work, The Republic. And so I thought to myself, well, I should probably at some point get around to trying to read Plato's work, The Republic. And so I was reading as I was also preparing this podcast episode, and I came to an interesting conversation. And the way that Plato's Republic is worked out is that Aristotle. So the way that you get the three big Greek philosophers, and this is how I remember, is in reverse order. So Socrates, and we're talking reverse alphabetical order. Socrates, then Plato, then Aristotle. That's kind of the timeline. So Socrates is hanging out with these guys. Long story short, he starts talking to this older gentleman named Cephalus. Don't know if I'm pronouncing that right, but that's what I'm going to go with. And Socrates begins asking Cephalus about money because Cephalus is older. He has wisdom. I'll just read this excerpt for you. Cephalus, I said, that's Socrates speaking. Did you inherit or did you earn most of what you possess? Well, what do you mean? I earned it. Socrates? It's Cephalus speaking. As a moneymaker, I was a sort of mean between my grandfather and my father. For my grandfather, whose namesake I am, inherited pretty nearly as much substance as I now possess. Who talks like that? Apparently Socrates did. And he increased it many times over. Not Socrates, the other guy. I'm sorry, I digress. Let me just read and not comment. Lysanias, my father, used it to a point where it was still less than it is now. I am satisfied if I leave not less, but rather a bit more than I inherited to my sons here. The reason I asked, you see, I said, is that to me you didn't seem overly fond of money. For the most part, those who do not make money themselves are that way. Those who do make it are twice as attached to it as others. For just as poets are fond of their poems and fathers of their children, so money makers too are serious about money as their own product. And they also are serious about it for the same reason other men are, for its use. They are, therefore, hard even to be with because they are willing to praise nothing but wealth. What you say is true, he said. Indeed it is, I said, but tell me something more. What do you suppose is the greatest good that you have enjoyed from possessing great wealth? What I say wouldn't persuade many, perhaps, for know well, Socrates, he said, that when a man comes near to the realization that he will be making an end, fear and care enter him for things to which he gave no thought before. The tales told about what is in Hades, that the one who has done unjust deeds here must pay the penalty there, at which he laughed up to then, now make his soul twist and turn because he fears they might be true. Whether it is due to debility of old age or whether he discerns something more of the things in that place because he is already nearer to them, as it were he is. At any rate, now full of suspicion and terror, and he reckons up his accounts and considers whether he has done anything unjust to anyone. Now, the man who finds many unjust deeds in his life often even wakes from his sleep in a fright, as children do, and lives in an anticipation of evil. To the man who is conscious in himself of no unjust deed, sweet and good hope is ever beside him. A nurse of his old age, as Pindar puts it, for you know, Socrates, he put it charmingly when he said that whoever lives out a just and holy life. Interesting. This non-Christian philosopher, Plato, who is the guy who actually wrote this, is well aware of the fact that what you have can be taken away from you very quickly. And the reality of death, which is what this kind of excerpt is talking about certainly puts things into perspective. So that's the first thought that I have on a Christian perspective on money is it's not really yours and it is fleeting. Second thought is this: money is a servant, not a master. That means your money should do what you're telling it to do. Think in our society, it's interesting because we treat both our money and our time very similarly. And most of us have overspent on both. And what I mean by that is most of us are in debt or have very little extra when it comes to money. And we're the same way with our time. We're so stinking busy, we don't have time to do anything. This is one of the things that I just loathe about Western society is we value busyness. And I think it's really dumb, to be quite honest. I think that there should be a value in managing our time in a way that our time serves us, not the other way around. And I'd say that about our schedule. If your schedule is controlling you, you're not controlling your schedule. You have a time management issue, and it's unhealthy. In the same way, we look at our money that way. It should be a servant, not a master. So then what do we do with even those two basic points? And again, you know what? We could talk a lot more about a Christian perspective on money, on what it is, why it exists, and even our resources and different things like that. But even with just those two things in mind, the question becomes, well, what do we do? And I'll make a couple of suggestions. First is this: live within your means. Live within your means. So a practical suggestion along these lines: if you don't have a budget, get one. Remember in my third and fourth, actually, I think it was all in my fourth year of college, I had a class. I don't even remember what it was called. Maybe it was just called business. And in that business class, one of the things that we went over was a personal budget. And we went through a book, I believe it was by a guy named Ethan Pope, called Personal Money Map. Don't quote me 100% on that, but I believe that's what it was called. And in that book, Ethan Pope, again, I believe I got the author right, outlined a simple way to rock a budget. And it was essentially really very similar to the envelope system that some people use. You get money in, you put that money into a certain envelope, you spend that money, it's gone. Shortly after that, one of the professors at the school took a group of us and said, if you'd like to learn how to budget, I have a program, an Excel spreadsheet. I can sit down with you guys and work out how to do this. And so what happened was we sat down in this group, and this professor, his name was Mark Hawks, taught us how to work an Excel spreadsheet budget. You may say, well, that sounds fairly simple. And it actually is fairly simple. It's a bit of work to keep it, but that ability to have a budget has absolutely been the one thing, practical thing, that has sustained me and my family over the past, I'm trying to think how long I've been out of school, 9 to 10 years. Because taking money and telling it where it should go, what it should do, and knowing how much I have to spend, how much we don't have to spend, has absolutely made it so that we can function. Now, God has been very faithful to us and blessed us, and there have been some significant things that have happened that have been very helpful. But I can say with 100% confidence, if I hadn't been taught how to budget, there is no way I would know how to live within my means. And so a very practical tip for you, in light of the fact that there is this perspective on money that it should be specifically a servant, not a master. That's, you know, we could go into the theology of that, or the doctrine surrounding that, the study of the scriptures and the reason that we come to that. But at the end of the day, if it's a servant, not a master, then you need to be able to tell your money what is going on. So live within your means. If you're not living within your means, you've got a problem. Again, in the same way that you have a time management problem, if you're constantly busy and your schedule is always telling you what to do, you have a money problem if you are overspending and not living within your means. A lot of practical things we could talk about there. I'm just going to leave that because we probably will circle back around to it a little bit. Second thing that I would say is live with an open hand. For a Christian, and this is maybe going to hurt a little bit to hear, but for a Christian, if you are not consistently giving your money away, you don't get the gospel. And people say, oh, you know, churches, they just want your money. I'm not even talking about giving to a church right now. That's another discussion, you know, the discussion of tithing or generous giving and what does the Bible teach about. That's not even what I'm talking about right now. What I'm talking about is just simple generosity. If you are not consistently giving from your financial pool, your wealth, you don't understand the gospel. And the reason that I say that is if you break down the gospel in one aspect to Jesus and to God being ultimately, completely, and wholly generous to us when we don't deserve it, then we should be so generous in everything. That would include our time. That would include our finances. That would include our energy, all of those things. And so from a Christian perspective, you should be generous with the resources you have. Now, I'm not saying you should be writing a $1,000 check every week to a charity. What I'm saying is you should consistently be planning, and this comes back to having a budget, planning to be able to be generous, to buy someone a coffee, to see someone who's having a rough week and give them $50. You know, for my family, we have a box in our Excel spreadsheet that is labeled generosity. I'm not going to act like I get a ton of money in there because the honest truth is I don't, but we try every time we get a paycheck to put a little bit of money aside for generosity so that we can just be generous, so that we can give our resources away, because I think that is a gospel-centered way to manage finances. And I think the ability to give what we have away speaks of an understanding of Jesus giving what he has to us. So be generous. Live with an open hand. Another point I'd say here is spend with a godly perspective. There's a pastor who I have enjoyed listening to. His name's Matt Chandler. He says something along the lines of this. He says, everything you have is the future of yard sales and dumps. And I think that's so true. We have so much stuff that is oftentimes so precious, and yet the ultimate destination for most of it is we're going to sell it in a few years in a yard sale, or our kids are going to be like, man, look at this stinging thing that my parents passed down to me. It's terrible. I'm taking it to the dump, right? Now, if you're nostalgic, you think that that's terrible. I'm not a very nostalgic person. I throw things away a lot that have been given to me. This is really a terrible thing to say, but I don't have a lot of nostalgia. So when I get things that have been given to me that were from my childhood, I'm like, man, you know, this looks like something that I don't care about. And it's terrible because my wife really does care about those kinds of things. And so we have this, you can't get rid of that. And yes, I can. And we go back and forth on that and tend to typically meet in the middle. But I think when you have that type of a perspective that what you have, what you buy here, you can't take with you, it maybe changes the way that you invest your money, changes the way that you spend your money. Even things like retirement. I know a lot of people, retirement's a big thing. It's good to put money away to support yourself in your later years. But I think there's a difference between being a little bit stingy so that you think, oh, I can live in a lot of wealth when I get old, versus putting away enough to support yourself while also being generous and realizing, you know what, I've got a few short years on this planet and nothing I have is coming with me. I think that changes your perspective. And so there is these couple practical things I would say that would influence and help us live in a gospel-centered, Christian-oriented way around finances. Now, I want to switch gears here for a moment. And I want to talk about debt. Debt is a significant issue. We talked about that statistic. 46% of Canadians are living within $200 of insolvency. I said, you know, I think we spend our time like our money, and a lot of us are in debt with our money. So I want to talk about debt. And before I talk about debt, so that I'm not being a hypocrite, I'm going to put my cards on the table. So these are some rough numbers for you, so you understand where I'm at before I talk about debt. My debt is roughly a $200,000 mortgage. It's about what we owe on our house. We have roughly $13,000 line of credit, and I have somewhere in the vicinity of $20,000 that I still owe on my student loan. That one really chaps my toes because, unfortunately, as much as I learned about managing money in my fourth year of college. My first 3 years, I knew absolutely nothing. And so I have student loans that I really probably shouldn't have nearly as much as I do. I took a year off after high school before I went to college. I spent the first number of months doing absolutely nothing, which drove my mother crazy. I shouldn't say absolutely nothing. I played a lot of video games. It was a waste of time. I can admit that, but it was also enjoyable at the time. I had a paper route. I'd wake up in the morning and go deliver something like 800 newspapers throughout the night. Not a lot of fun. And then I think it was in March or April, I got a full-time job. I think I was making $13 an hour, $12 or $13 an hour, which I thought was pretty good money at the time. And for a first job, considering what minimum wage was at the time, I think it was $8 or $9 an hour. I wasn't doing too bad, but I didn't have any expenses. So what do you think I did? I blew a lot of money. I bought a belly boat. I bought a fly rod. At some point, I bought a rifle. And I really don't have anything to show for the 5 or 6 months that I was working full time that I could have been putting away a significant amount for college. I don't know where the money went. And it's really something that I wish I would have done better. But that's just to give you my cards on the table as we go into a little bit of a discussion about debt. Now, we could go into a very biblical, again, theological discussion on debt, whether you should have debt, what does the Bible teach about debt. I haven't actually studied a ton in that realm. I know that there are some things that we could dive into, but really what I want to do is, in light of kind of the general picture of what the Bible teaches as a whole and some of the things that we've pointed out already in regards to generosity and living within your means and all of those things, is just make a few practical suggestions. And here they are. First thing I would suggest when it comes to debt is, don't make a practice of buying things that you don't have money for. Okay, it's one thing to have a vehicle payment. I mean, in our society, most of us don't work right by our house. We have to drive. And so, you know, you need a kind of reliable vehicle. It's one thing to have a mortgage. Most of us need to have somewhere to live, mortgage or paying rent. I remember someone at some point saying, you know, you're either paying someone else's mortgage or you're paying your own. I think there's validity to that. And so it's one thing to have kind of these, what could I call them? Significant debt, things that are actually worth investing in, investments. It's one thing to have debt because of things that you kind of need to invest in. It's another thing to put, a new cell phone on the credit card, or to put the kids' swimming lessons, just throw that on the credit card. Or, man, there's a new Tika T3 7mm that I would love for sheep hunting, so I'll throw that on the credit card even though I don't have money. There's these two different kinds of debts. I would say don't make a practice of buying things that are going to put you in debt. So hopefully you can kind of use wisdom to discern the things that you need versus the things that you want. And when it comes to the things that you need, even then, be wise about what your price range is. You need a vehicle. You may not necessarily need a Lamborghini, okay? So be wise in how you're going into debt. The reason that this is, and I think our society is beginning to see this, is that debt is kind of like a chain. And every debt that you add on, every time you spend money you don't have, you're kind of throwing another chain over your back. And the reason that this is, A, it's just practical not to do that to yourself. But as a Christian, there's this principle that you should always be as free as possible to do what God calls you to do. And insecure debt, or money that you owe that doesn't have, it's not paying out. You're not, a house. Well, maybe you owe money, but you can sell the house and get most of that money, or even make money off of it. You know, the new gun, well, maybe you could sell that, but it's still bad practice. I digress. There are certain types of debt that you go into that are going to chain you down. And this principle, this idea in Christianity, is if God calls you, you should be able to pick up and do what he is calling you to do. And insecure debt, which is the word I'm going to use for it, prohibits your ability to do that. And so I would suggest, as a Christian principle, don't make a practice of buying things you don't have money for. And that ties in with this idea of living within your means, which ties in with the idea of sit down, make yourself a budget so you know if you're living within your means. If you sit down and you're figuring out your expenses versus your income, and there's a significant difference there where your expenses outweigh your income, there's a problem. And you're setting yourself up for a world of hurt that in a practical way is going to suck, and in a spiritual way, it's ultimately going to hinder you. Talk about one last thing here. Talk about fear. Now, maybe you're someone who your financial situation is pretty dire or pretty grave. And I think one of the things that we're tempted to do when we get into very negative financial situations is we become so afraid that we become paralyzed. And so rather than addressing the issues, we ignore them. Rather than cutting our spending and making a budget and making sure we're living within our means, we just keep piling up the debt. We keep spending the money that we don't have. And all of a sudden, we're so afraid that we're just paralyzed, or maybe we just ignore what's going on. And a practical thing that's going to push into spiritual things and your ability to live out and walk out a Christian life is ignoring your financial situation. If it's real bad, isn't going to make it better. So again, I'd just like to give you a few thoughts, a few tips. The first is this: find someone who is good at managing money and get their help. Now, you got to be careful here because you don't want to be swindled. So when I say find someone who's good at managing money, it'd be someone that you trust, someone who can sit down with you and walk through with you what it looks like to manage finances well. Another thing, that if you're married, get on the same page as your spouse. Managing your finances, if you're not on the same page as the person that you're sharing your life with, is going to be a nightmare. So just those two things, even just find someone who can sit down with you and look at your situation and help you out, help you walk through it, getting on the same page as your spouse. Those things are going to do a world to help you. And at the end of the day, you know, yes, this is practical. It's utterly practical to talk about money because we all have to deal with it. But it's also utterly spiritual, because the way that you manage your finances, the way that you deal with your money, is going to speak volumes about the way that you view God. If you are stingy with your money, how do you view God? Do you view him as generous? Probably not. And so when it really comes down to it, the way that you manage your money is going to be a gospel issue, because what you do with your money is going to tell people what you believe about God. So my encouragement to you is, deal well with your money. Get your finances under control. Manage them in a godly way. If you need help, get the help you need. If you're feeling afraid or overwhelmed by your financial situation, there's one more thing that I'd suggest you do, and that's ask God for wisdom. God never rejects a request for wisdom. The book of James talks about that. And so I shouldn't say never. Maybe if you're asking for some bizarre form of wisdom, I don't know. I'm going to digress here. Pray about it. Ask for wisdom, and then take the steps you need to take to get to where you need to get to be an individual who's honoring God with your finances. That's all I've got for now. Thank you for listening, and we will see you on the next episode.